Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. The debt ceiling deal finally passed today, averting a national government default. With the high drama now behind us, what lies ahead for the country and our budget? To discuss that, I'm joined by Adolfo Laurenti. He's the deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Thank you for joining me, Adolfo.
Hello, good afternoon.
Now, an over $2 trillion increase in the debt ceiling now approved that should cover the U.S. until 2013. If we ultimately are looking at the debt continuing to rise, how effective was this deal when it comes to really addressing our overspending?
Well, this was something important. I think for the very first time we have addressed that the real fiscal challenges for the United States are in the excess spending, and we have postponed any action on the revenue side. So that's positive. On the other side, we also have postponed some important decisions that need to be done on spending on entitlement. I would call it like the first act, but we still have other acts to follow to really see a change in the broad picture. So the jury is still out.
Now, rolling back the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, that did not occur here. Would that not have helped us along the way? That would have brought in, I think, around $700 billion a year, wouldn't it? Would it not?
This is a very complex issue. I am in favor of increasing tax revenues, but I do not believe we can achieve tax revenues by increasing tax rates. Let me explain. We have a lot of loopholes in our tax code. Think of a tax deduction, tax credits, any form of, you know, loopholes to really help people to dodge this tax or that. That's a lot of taxes that are not collected by the government. In order to raise that revenues, you do not necessarily need to increase tax rates. You just need to tax the loopholes. So I really think that's a missed opportunity in the current deal, but it's not ruled out that we'll eventually come back at a later time. So we have some hope.
I see. Although that is a major point of contention for certainly corporations who rely on these tax loopholes to make the profits they do make now.
Yes, but that's not true just for corporation. It's also a huge issue for individual. I think that 50% of taxpayers contribute less than 3% of total revenues. We are just not talking about people who have a very little income. We are talking about people who are able to dodge a lot of taxes. So corporations are in issues, but individual filers are also in issues. I really think we need to reopen the discussion about the tax system and try to be as comprehensive as possible in addressing the issue.
Do you think in general the corporations in the U.S. and the wealthiest Americans are taxed appropriately, or do the loopholes just give them all kinds of ways to avoid being taxed properly here?
Well, again, if you just look at tax rates, we have in the United States some among the highest tax rates in the world. Our companies are taxed at higher rates than in France. So that's very surprising to many. The point is that tax rates are not real because of all the loopholes we have in the system. I would prefer a tax system that would be much more simple, much more transparent. Less loopholes, much more straightforward way to address income and taxes, and much more certainty in hitting the corporation. I think corporation would be on board for that. Yes, some of them would have to pay more taxes, but they are also spending a lot just to take advantage of those loopholes. So I think that a simpler system would be beneficial for everyone.
There's been so much focus on the U.S. with this debt ceiling debate. The U.S. is unique in even having a debt ceiling. Very few countries do. How do European governments manage their budgets in comparison to the way we do our own here?
Badly. I think a part of the advantage to have a debt ceiling is that at least we can have these type of conversations. And, you know, no matter how damaging the drama of the past 2 weeks was, at least it forced us on addressing these long-term issues. In Europe, they do not have debt ceiling. They never had these debates. And the result is that you see the fiscal crisis that you see over there. Think of Greece, of Portugal, of Ireland, of Italy, of Spain. You know, we can go down the list, and a lot of problems are there because those countries never had to take action early on, and they kept kicking the can down the road, with the result that at one point they really ran into major sovereign debt issues. So in one sense, we have this mixed blessing that the debt ceiling is forcing us to take action early on.
I'm talking to Adolfo Laurenti. He's the deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. At this point, everybody knows that the biggest problem in the budget is the growing costs of Medicare and Social Security. What kind of approach will we need to take to get this portion of the budget under control?
I think we need to be very honest about the realities of these programs. In the case of Social Security, at least we have an understanding of the levers that we can impact. You know, we can work longer, we can pay more taxes into the system, or we can get less benefits. We do not have a very good understanding about the healthcare situation, unfortunately. There is a lot of uncertainty. But if you look at the long-term projection about both programs, there is no doubt they are both not sustainable in the long term. So this is not really about Republicans or Democrats or liberal or conservative. I think that everyone who cares about this program, everyone who wants to have this program in existence in the future, needs to make sure that these programs are both sustainable and some modification has to take place. Unfortunately, I think we dodge a little bit this issue. There isn't much about the entitlements in the deal that was reached by the House and the Senate. We will probably need to come back and revisit that. But again, we are not revisiting Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare as enemy of the programs, but we just need to make those changes if we want these programs to survive in the future.
You're talking about the fact that they will have to be reduced fairly significantly then for them to continue on.
Well, we need to figure out a way to address. You know, a reduction is entirely possible, but we also need to decide what type of role we want for Social Security, how much income we want to pay to people who retire, how long we want to work, and the same true is in the case of the healthcare programs. I am reluctant to say that we really need to cut them drastically, but that's a possibility. The problem, to my eyes, is that if we want them to survive, something has to be done. Cutting is one way. You know, we could agree at one point that we want to keep them in the present form, which I don't think it will be possible. It will cost a lot of money. And so the question to ask is, how much do you want to pay to keep these programs alive? There are several dimensions you can analyze the issues. The problem is there are hard trade-offs that we need to face, and the later we delay a response, the more painful these adjustments will be.
Finally, the agreement calls for both houses of Congress to vote on a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which seems like an incredibly drastic move. How potentially damaging would such a dramatic shift in the way we handle our budget be to the economy?
You know, I am sympathetic to the cause for rules about government spending. I am not sure that a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution is the best way to go. You can write intelligent rules that really constrain spending and make sure that there is control over the spending, but you can also write extremely stupid rules. Now, there were rules imposed by the European Union about the spending of individual countries, and those were stupid rules that never worked. So I think it really depends at the end of the day by the language of such an amendment. It could help, but it could also be extremely damaging to the economy. We do not want to raise taxes or cut spending when the economy is very, very weak. There is something to be said about counter-cyclical programs. again, depending on how you write an amendment, you can accommodate for these hard economic times, or you can exacerbate those economic times. So it's an idea to discuss, but I would be very careful, and it would really depend on the way this amendment will be written.
Adolfo Laurenti, he's the deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Thank you for joining me, Adolfo.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more. I'm Michael Cohen, and you're listening to 1320 WILS.